Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, hello, and welcome, or should I say welcome back, to the Indie Football Podcast. World Cup Daily Edition from Russia, as ever. And I am still very much Ed Mallion, sports editor of The Independent, and sat alongside me is chief football writer of The Independent, Miguel Delaney. Miguel, hello.
Good evening.
Good evening, and it was a good evening, let's be honest. It was a great evening of football with an absolutely unbelievable kind of turn of events in the last few minutes as Group B reached its conclusion. Group A also reached its conclusion today, but in far less interesting fashion. So let's dig right in. The result of it all, Miguel, is that Spain top Group B and Portugal go through in second place, but it was very close in the end.
Yeah, I have a tension headache for a variety of reasons after that denouement, and one of them was actually trying to keep track of, hang on, what does this mean? Are Spain ahead now? We were mostly watching the Spanish game here and basically flicking it to Portugal every time there was an incident. From what I've heard, though, from what I gather from our colleagues who were at the Portuguese game, that was a lot less entertaining in terms of pure football than the Spain-Morocco game, but maybe more interesting in terms of drama, given the controversy over VAR and everything that went on.
Big night for VAR. Within about 60 seconds at the end, and this was the real turning point, or it could have been even more of a turning point, was Iago Aspas, the substitute who came on for Spain, and Spain desperately needed an equaliser. They're 2-1 down at that point. So they went behind early on, terrible mistake from Iniesta, and Sergio Ramos, kind of miscommunication, to be kind. Morocco kept their nerve, went ahead. And then Spain equalised. Great goal. Iniesta setting up Isco. And then Morocco had got... How did they score the second again?
The second was a header from this corner.
Oh, great header. Great header. And they also hit the bar, and they also had another one-on-one.
Piqué should have been sent off.
Piqué should have been sent off. Spain got very lucky to even get a draw.
But then there's such a weird thing. Like in basically all their matches so far, Spain have gone through spells where they look, even tonight, some of the passing, like this is the first, their equaliser is supreme. But in every match so far, Spain have gone through spells where they look exceptional, and then within 5 minutes, look so shaky, and as if they could be about to crash out any moment. And tonight was another one. One big point with them, I would say, is that other than the second half against Portugal, that defence has looked very shaky. Piqué is not at his best, but then I wonder how much that connected to the probably more relevant fact that he and Ramos don't seem to fully trust De Gea in terms of giving him the ball. And that, obviously, I think that does have a big effect on where a defence can set themselves up, how far they can pull away from goal. It's an interesting one, but it's a problem for Spain, except it's a problem they might have temporarily solved for a bit because, I mean, beyond that, apart from being steeped to get through maybe in the end, they were steeped because now suddenly they're on the more forgiving side of the draw.
Absolutely unbelievable turn of events at the end to make that happen. But basically, Iran, at the same time as Aspas came on and scored the equaliser to make it 2-2 at the death, which was given as offside, and then overturned by the video referee to become a goal to put Spain back in there. At the same time, Iran got a penalty, a soft penalty really, through VAR, but a penalty nonetheless. They scored. Early on in the game, Cristiano Ronaldo had a penalty saved. A pretty poor penalty as well, it must be said, from the Real Madrid man. So then what had happened, it meant that Spain had gone top of the group with that Iran equaliser. Iran were just one goal away from qualifying, and they very nearly got it with that chance right at the death.
In the middle of all of that, I mean, there's so much, if you think about the amount of storylines, like, in the middle of all of that, Ronaldo, who'd been kind of been feted as the hero of the tournament, all this battle with Messi, all the rest of it, he may have really cost Portugal with that penalty miss. Because it's ultimately meant they're on the wrong side of the draw. And he probably should have gone as well. I mean, I have to look at that properly, but my slight feeling is he should have been sent off.
Both PK and Ronaldo should have been sent off, from what I saw. And they weren't. And you can draw your own conclusions as to why that happens. But anyway, Spain topped the group in the end. Portugal second. That's on goals scored. And Iran just a point behind. And Morocco go out with 1 point, having been actually an incredibly impressive team.
In quality-wise, I mean, one of the better sides of the tournament, but kind of the most enjoyable to watch.
Yeah, and to be honest, you know, it's like I was saying, I think the other day about Senegal and Japan. They're both teams that I've actually enjoyed watching, even though, you know, they might not be quality from 1 to 11, but they are actually an entertaining team to watch. And, you know, when you have to watch every game, you don't want to have to watch the stuff that we had to watch earlier on this afternoon, which we should also probably cover, which is Uruguay against Russia. That game decides the top of Group A. And it felt a little bit like the Russian bubble burst today. They were fairly comprehensively beaten, 3-0 in the end. Uruguay went 1-0 up after 10 minutes, which was a genius moment from Luis Suarez. Great free kick, although the keeper could have done better, but I think he actually tricked the keeper, which is in itself a skill. What happens next? They get the second goal on 25 minutes.
Just
freak deflection.
Apparently there's a quote from Isco here. And next we'll play against Russia with Putin in attendance, the journalist said, Isco. But hopefully there'll also be other people there. And in the studio in Spain. Let's hope that VAR will still be allowed to work.
Anyway. What was I saying? Yes, deflected goal for Uruguay. Made it 2-0 in 25 minutes. Then one of the Russians went and got himself sent off for two yellows in the first half. So they're 2-0 down, and it's then a man down, and Russia never looked like getting back into it. They were pretty poor without Golovin, and then late, Cavani got a third. So Uruguay go through. They've never looked incredible. They've never looked absolutely brilliant. This is the goal actually just about to show on replay of Miguel Suarez. Mm-hmm. And it's three games, three wins, scored five, conceded zero. That's all you can do in a weak group, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I suppose when your side like Uruguay, who are almost the Atletico Madrid of international football, write down some of the players, especially the centre-halves, kind of built on counter-attack and defence, that's almost a weirdly tough group for them, because it's teams that maybe aren't set up to play into their hands in the way some better teams would be. So yeah, and like they went about in a thorough way.
And Saudi Arabia beat Egypt 2-1 in a game that won't matter to anyone except maybe the Saudis. But the main point being obviously as well that Egypt had a terrible campaign, one really to forget for them. And especially with all the news around Mo Salah, you know, who we're told is considering retiring from the international team. But what does this mean? What's the upshot of these four games we had today? The upshot is that Spain win the group and they go on to the more favourable side of the draw, which, considering their performance today, is an incredibly lucky twist of fate. But it means that this Sunday, July the 1st, in 6 days' time, they will be playing against host Russia at the Luzhniki Stadium in Moscow. You and I are likely to be present at that one, Miguel. And you'd say that Russia are kind of the sort of team that you'd like to see Spain play against.
Yeah, I think Spain, it suits them much more than playing Uruguay, who would have been like Iran and kind of dug in and made a very difficult night while having Suarez up front. Uruguay, I think, could very easily have done Spain. Or I think Russia will be open up a bit, and they're not that convincing, really, despite those two opening wins. I think Spain should beat them relatively easy, although, you know, we could always have a Korea 2002 situation. You do feel with today, with the result against Uruguay, maybe there's an element of, right, Russia, you've had your fun now, goodbye. haven't disgraced yourselves.
I said that, you know, Uruguay have had an easy start, so you can't read too much into what they've done so far. And they are a team, let's be honest, that are better suited to play against, in inverted commas, good sides than bad sides. But, you know, Uruguay's real tournament starts now. whereas Russia's real tournament might have started today, and they didn't really enjoy it that much. So we're going to have Spain versus Russia, and you fancy Spain to get through, and they're on the more favourable side of the draw. The other game, we've absolutely confirmed then, is Saturday night in Sochi, which will be Uruguay versus Portugal. Now, that one does seem interesting. It's two naturally conservative sides. It's two sides who have got ageing but kind of reliable defences. Mm. Midfields that have disappointed in this tournament so far.
Uruguay, actually, it's quite to match them up would be quite interesting. There's an idea for peace as well ahead of the game. Because they're such similar in style, I'd say Uruguay's defence is better, but Portugal's...
Uruguay's defence might be the best in the entire competition, I think.
Portugal's game breaker is better. Obviously, Ronaldo's better than... Even Suarez at his peak, you would say, but especially Suarez now. It could be a game where midfield is bypassed.
Portugal have the best midfield personnel, but they are yet to actually, in any game, make that to good use. You know,
that was exactly the same in Euro 2016.
Bernardo Silva did nothing in any of the games he's played because he's just been kind of put on the side of that midfield. William Carvalho, like, flatters to deceive for me. João Mario runs a lot but doesn't really do much. Doesn't get anything done. Bruno Fernandes started the first game. They dropped him to go for more control with Romario. Didn't really work. Quaresma played today, scored a great goal with the outside of his boot. But you can't see them starting Ricardo Quaresma against Uruguay, can you? So I don't know which way that game's going to go. I'm slightly leaning Uruguay. I am slightly leaning Uruguay because their defence is so good and they just need one game. They just need one goal, sorry. Yeah. They have played Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and Russia, so not necessarily the greatest of tests. But having Godin and Jimenez in there is massive because to have a club partnership that have played together for 5-6 years at the top level, think of like the non-verbal communication they have and everything they know, and then think what they're going to do on set pieces to Portugal, who have looked a bit ragged. And I think it's a good recipe for beating Portugal.
You've really convinced me. I think I'm beginning to think Uruguay are going to win that game.
Yeah, and as I say, I mean, they weren't great in the opening couple of games, Uruguay, but they were much better today, switching... He doesn't actually play three at the back. Tabarez has this thing. He's got a squad that can play either with three at the back or four at the back. And they often play a kind of hybrid where the full-back on one side kind of raids forward and the other one is a centre-back who tucks in. I actually think it's a very good system. But they're all used to playing it. So, again, it's not a problem. This is a well-drilled unit, a unit that's played a lot of tournaments together. And I don't think you can underestimate how important that is. So I guess we should... preview some of tomorrow's games, Miguel, because there are some big ones tomorrow. And then we will check in with the man up in Rapino, who actually told me it's pronounced Repino, which has completely blown my mind. But we are at Denmark versus France tomorrow at...
A game that...
3 p.m. UK time.
A game that superficially, well, on the surface, looks as if, oh, there's not much on it, France should eat up the group, etc., but... That's not the case at all. France can't afford to drop to rest players because if they lose this game, they lose top spot. And then well, Denmark are by no, because they've only got 4 points, they're by no means safe either. It's quite nicely set up, really.
Johnny Liu has written an absolutely belting piece on Christian Eriksen, which I urge you by the time...
Is that the one done with the help of Frank de Boer?
He's talked to Frank de Boer, he's talked to his old PE teacher. The opening line is about some sort of Viking settlement in 1343. It's absolutely brilliant, and I implore you to go out and read that, find that in the usual places, independent.co.uk/football, but also, you know, via social media, very easy to find. So Denmark versus France will be an interesting one. France are yet to really, you know, kick into gear. They played Australia and Peru, and they've never looked particularly comfortable in either of those games. And Australia and Peru might prove to be, I think, two of the lesser sides overall. They're probably going to be in that.
Peru have been fun though.
Yes, no, for fun for sure. But Peru have never really look like scoring. You know, they haven't threatened. Yeah, yeah. They haven't had a striker. But that was one of their big problems.
That was an issue in qualifying as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, and you know, they have been great for the, they've been great for the competition. They've been great for the tournament. Much more interesting than like a Paraguay or whatever.
Well, our boy that we flagged, Arzini, he looks like he's going to start for Australia.
Arzani, yeah, he played well as a substitute the other day, and
Arzani, sorry.
Yeah. They do look like they did have a bit more in that last half an hour of the game of the day, but they had to, you know, that was their tournament was on the line. Australia's tournament isn't over. They could still go through. If there's a positive result, it's if France beat Denmark, right? If France beat Denmark and Australia win, then Australia go through.
Yeah.
That's not a ludicrous scenario.
No, not at all.
It's not a ludicrous scenario. It would be enormous for soccer in Australia if they did qualify. So Critch is down there for Australia, Peru in Sochi. And I'm quite looking forward to seeing that shakes out. So that's the lunchtime stuff. I say we'll be at Denmark, France.
The worst thing would be if it gets to 70 minutes though in this game. Not to suggest that anything like obviously agreed between teams, but it does happen in these sort of games. There's suddenly there's that subconsciously all the players realize we better not go for this because we're putting ourselves in danger, and because both Denmark and France realize that you know a draw France will go top and the Danes will get through.
But it does make it easier to write a match report. So let's not rule it out. Tomorrow night, though, is the one that I'm most looking forward to. It is the culmination of Group D, where Nigeria play Argentina and Iceland play Croatia. We've got Johnny and Jack going to Nigeria, Argentina, and St. Petersburg, where Argentina, if they win, despite a disastrous campaign, which followed a disastrous preparation period. They somehow could be in the mix here, and you know, once you're in the knockout stage, you know everything else is forgotten.
Yeah, yeah, and you can like you know, that's the beauty in cup competitions in these ways. They don't actually need to be. Once you go to get these latter stages, you don't need to do all that much. A little bit of luck can go a long way. I mean, in all this, I still can't help the feeling that one of the issues of Argentina, and one of the issues was one of the most talked about points and players of the tournament, Messi. I mean, he retired in 2016. A sense of responsibility and legacy brought him back. He dragged them through, and then there was almost a presumption, or not the presumption, but maybe the hope that, okay, we're through now. Now everything we have time to fix everything. Then he gets to Russia for what he hoped was going to be this big last opportunity in his prime. And then sees the shambles, and he wondered if that subconsciously caused him to kind of retreat, and or just maybe that's why he's so down. But then against all that, I mean, there was interesting quotes from Mascherano today about destiny and all this. That who know, it's funny. It's happened at tournaments in the past. Suddenly you get this jolt, a team that looked a joke, can suddenly change. There's that. I mean, I think Frank de Boer said it in his column for us last week that a feeling goes a long way in something as intense as a World Cup in such a short scale of time.
I did half write a piece on the plane over, which I never got round to finishing. It was about their preparation for this World Cup and how it had been so bad and why it had been so bad and the reasons that kind of led up to that. And in there, I mentioned, you know, that it could be like the first chapter of like a documentary. You know, it's like, you know, how bad the preparation had been. Of course, like the thing was going to happen. But it's also kind of, you know, everyone had written them off, or their preparation was bad, they only had 1 point after two games, and then it all turns round.
Yeah.
You know, the greatest football stories usually start with adversity.
Yeah, yeah.
So, it'll be interesting to see. I've written a big piece on Argentina and some of the other stuff Mascherano said, and some of the big issues they've had this weekend, which if you haven't heard about, and I implore you to go and read that because it's been pretty wild. It includes a lot of leaked WhatsApp audio notes, some from journalists and some from Diego Simeone criticising the team. And there was an allegation that Mascherano and Christian Pavon had had some fisticuffs. They got into a fight. It was denied by the players, but Mascherano turned up with a black eye. There's all sorts going on in there. So and there's also a cake which weighs 150 kilograms and took 5 days to make. So if you are interested at all in Argentina, I urge you to go and read that. The other game in that one, Iceland Croatia. So that is also, so Croatia are top of the group of six at the moment, and they've got a very healthy goal difference. But if Iceland do beat them, and Croatia are going to rotate the team, if Iceland do beat them, they can still leapfrog. They can still stay ahead of Argentina, is that correct?
Yeah.
Right, that's correct. So, Argentina, it would be the goal difference thing. Nigeria obviously can go through as well. Nigeria win against Argentina, and it's all smiles because they won 2-0 the other day. So this is a really interesting group. It's got four teams that all, I think, you wouldn't complain necessarily if they're in the round of 16. It would be interesting to see how Iceland approach it tomorrow, because we were discussing this earlier on the way back from dinner, and we're saying Iceland have had, you know, obviously this is the greatest period in their history in terms of success. They have had their first ever tournament 2 years ago, and they got through to the quarters.
Yeah, beat England in the last
quarterfinals. Yes, I remember they beat England. Yes, and then the result against Argentina, which was a draw that felt like a win. Obviously, Nigeria was a disappointment, but if they beat Croatia, they can get through. But the thing is that they know that they have to go out and beat Croatia by a few goals. But what all we've seen from Iceland, really, in this period of in inverted commas success, and it, I guess it is definitely success for a country so small.
Mm-hmm.
But all we've seen from them is defensive reactive play, and that's what they've been really good at, frustrating teams. But now, for once, you know, and we've only had a small sample size because they haven't been around that long.
I'm trying to think,
they have to go out and they have to attack, and they have to try and win this game by a few goals.
Do they win any other group games in Euro 2016, actually? I think their first win might have been England, was it?
They're in the same group as Portugal, Hungary, and Austria.
They beat Austria in the last... Yeah, the last minute winner, actually, to be fair. Yeah. Against Austria. But even... So, they need a bit more than that tomorrow against a better side.
Yeah, so that's a 2-1 win, last-minute goal, where they knew they had to get a goal to go through. This is a game where they have to approach it knowing that they need a significant margin of victory against a team that is very good in Croatia. So that is obviously an interesting subplot. I have to say, I won't be watching that game. I will be watching Nigeria-Argentina, although it probably might be time for us to set up some sort of two-screen scenario in this room.
Well, yeah, tonight felt like it.
Yeah, flicking between the two is not a good situation. So if we get back in time after Denmark-France, then we're going to have to double these up. But that really promises Group C, Group D finales. They promise to be very interesting. And then we're on to Wednesday, which will be great. Oh, God, it's Thursday. It's England playing. So I did talk to Jackpit Brooke earlier on. He just sent me a little note to explain what the situation was with England today. So I'll just drop that in here so you get your little England update. And then we'll round off the show.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, Ed. How are you? I'm back in Repino, having flown from Nizhny Novgorod to Moscow and then Moscow to St. Petersburg this morning. England obviously flew straight back on Sunday afternoon, so they've had I think a relaxing day off today, and then we'll resume training and media duties tomorrow, that is Tuesday, ahead of, well, I was going to say the big one against Belgium. It's kind of less big now than we expected it would have been, because, one, because England and Belgium are both through, and also because it's not obvious what the incentives are to win, or rather, we believe that Belgium don't particularly want to win that much. And so the question really from England's perspective is, how much are they chasing that big win to top the group, and what sort of a team is Southgate going to play? I can tell you this now, because it's no longer, we won't be embargoed by the time this podcast is published, but after the game on Sunday night, we spoke to Gareth Southgate in one of the corridors at the stadium, and he was talking through this issue, and he said something which I think is absolutely true, which is that it doesn't really fit with our national mindset not to try and win the game. So there's no chance of England, you know, doing anything other than going for the win. And I think that's right. I don't think that the English football nation is very canny. Like, I don't think we're smart enough to kind of think that we can turn our momentum off and then back on again like a tap. And I think he's got that right. I mean, if, you know, there are examples in history of teams, you know, like Spain in Euro 2008, who made lots of changes their third game, but then got back on it for the next game and then went on to great success, obviously. But lots of teams who try that fail. And I don't know, I just don't get the impression that England could do that properly. I mean, remember Euro 2016, 2 years ago, when Roy Hodgson made six changes. You know, we beat Wales 2-1 in the last minute. Six changes to the Slovakia game, terrible 0-0 draw, lost any momentum, then went out to Iceland. So I think Southgate's right to try to win, but the big question really is, what sort of a team is he going to put out? Because he did say that he will be making changes. Now, there's a few different issues there. There's players that they need to get more minutes into. So I think I imagine we'll probably see Marcus Rashford starting, I imagine, ahead of Raheem Sterling. I think we're going to see Danny Rose starting as well, ahead of Ashley Young. I think that Rose is in England's best team. I think that it was always Southgate's intention for Rose to be the first choice left back. And it was only really because Rose showed up not as fit as Southgate would hope that he's gone with Young instead of Rose. But I think Rose will play. And then beyond that, there's like a few players who might be tired, and that means that he might give them a day off in Kaliningrad, like Jordan Henderson, perhaps, for Eric Dier. He might bring Dele Alli back in, either for Loftus-Cheek or for Lingard, who's done an awful lot of work in the two games so far. But I don't think he'll want to make too many more changes beyond that. I mean, of course, he could, you know, there's tons of players he could bring in. He could bring in Cahill, Jones, Delph, Vardy. He can move players around within the system. He can move Walker to right wing back to bring in another centre back if he wants to rest Trippier, who's been very good so far. But I think he'd be reluctant to make too many changes for those reasons. And because they want to win the game and win the group. I mean, I think we're expecting Belgium to make a lot of changes, particularly in attacking positions. I think Courtois will play. Kompany might come back in. Alderweireld and Vertonghen might stay. But further up the pitch, I think Chadli will come in. Fellaini will come in. Thorgan Hazard. Adan Januzaj. Batshuayi. So it will be a different looking Belgium team. But this is kind of the point. I was going to say the exciting part is all exciting. This is the very exciting part where, as the results come in from other groups, we can start to map out what might happen next. I mean, one of the reasons why Belgium wouldn't mind finishing second is that, one, their last 16 game would be at the it would be at the Spartak Stadium in Moscow. I think Belgium is staying near Moscow, so it'd be less travelling. It's also a day after. It's on the it would give them an extra day of rest after the Kaliningrad game, whereas England would have a kind of quicker turnaround. I think it's Monday and Tuesday of next week when those last 16 games are. So for England, it's a period which you would expect to be tense, and which in previous World Cups, you know, going to Costa Rica, the third game in 2014, England were already out by then, but going into the Slovenia game in 2010, they had to win to go through. But it won't be like that. It won't be one of these kind of nerve-wracking matches where they have to squeeze out a result to progress. All of which means that, you know, we're almost in a kind of small lull now after the drama of the first two matches. And I think particularly after the team sheet story, and which is kind of the only sort of what you might call a wrinkle in the England camp so far, we're almost kind of waiting for the next thing to bubble up, whatever that might be. But England will be doing media activity tomorrow. They will be putting a player up. So next time we speak tomorrow evening, which I think will probably be after the Argentina-Nigeria game, I'll be able to update you again on the mood in the England camp and where they are. Bye.
So Jack's update on England, keeping you up to date. I guess everyone back home is thoroughly enthused. He managed to refrain. I think he received a reprimand for his language yesterday.
There's no room for filth.
There's absolutely no room for filth on this podcast. The England, I mean, so we've had 24 hours, I guess, to think about that England performance and how we feel about it. And I have to say that I think the major thing for me is that there was enough transferable stuff in there, i.e., yes, you're playing against a poor team, and they were playing against a poor team in Panama, but things like set piece success translate whether you're playing against a bad team or a good team.
Mm-hmm.
And there are good teams who don't spend a lot of time coaching those sorts of things, and there are bad teams that do. And I think England might be a good team that do.
Yeah.
So it's an important thing that we've seen there. The attention to detail stuff we're talking about with Harry Kane, that's not going to change. Having an elite goal-scoring striker, and how many teams have we seen at this competition who, like, if they had a good finisher,
yeah,
if they had a goal-scorer, would be massive.
Spain with Harry Kane.
Right. I mean, Spain with Harry Kane.
I mean, Costa's good, but Kane is just...
Diego Costa today, I thought, played quite well so far this tournament, was an absolute ghost.
Yeah.
I can't remember him doing anything of importance.
All I can remember is that fluff chance.
And just because we were watching it in standard definition, you were like, who was that?
Yeah. And thankfully, had I not been basically off writing the last few days, I had 2 days where I did have to write, because I had been planning a piece on how Diego Costa has become Spain's David Villa of 2010, but maybe that would, after that performance, that wouldn't have been the best game to write it.
Iago Aspas will probably get a couple of shouts, I think, to start against Russia, because he came on, he scored the equaliser, and he looked more dangerous in a very short period than Costa did in most of the game. Whether Hierro has the huevos to do anything about it, I'm not sure, because there were some signs at the end. You didn't feel confident that he had that under control, did you?
This is a growing issue with Spain, and I know we spoke so much about whether Spain can be self-managing, but to be fair, we did say that what could be a worry is that, I mean, even if Lopetegui wasn't a brilliant manager, he did think a lot about these little kind of tactical tweaks, and you get the sense that Hierro just isn't as on top of that. And as well as that, it does feel as if he doesn't have the assertiveness to make the decisions. I mean, this was actually an issue with him in Oviedo as well. He used to complain that he was quite... slow with subs, and I mean, basically it's a lack of decisiveness.
I do think that is what they're missing with the Lopetegui thing, and you know, it's all going to come out down the line, isn't it? The Lopetegui Spain Real Madrid controversy has just been parked for now, hasn't it? You know, it's certainly not dead.
If they go early, it'll come up again.
Absolutely will. But Hierro doesn't appear to have... I don't know if it's the confidence in himself or just, you know, the instincts. It might just be that... Or it might be that he doesn't know the players as well, because, you know, Lopetegui's coached a lot of these since he was... since they were a lot younger, you know, since... I mean, I guess he was a lot younger as well. That's literally how time works. But otherwise, no, I think what we've seen from England is that there are some very... positive signs that will transfer to other teams. Now, you can't always get the luck of it hitting Harry Kane's heel and going in, and you'll play against better defences and you'll give up more chances, I guess, as well. But there was enough positivity, I think, to know it wasn't just an illusion. It wasn't just, oh, great, the sun was out, everyone's having a barbecue and they're playing against someone crap. So... stay positive on that front. I think, as Jack said, there's going to be some media availability tomorrow, so we'll hear a little bit more from England camp tomorrow. You'll certainly hear more from us. As I say, stay tuned to the website where we'll be covering both of those group finales that look so interesting tomorrow night. And by the time we record the next podcast, Miguel, Lionel Messi might have played his final ever World Cup game. And with that, on that somber note, well, yeah, and also many people won't know how that meant. But as ever, thank you for listening. We appreciate every single one of you that downloads the podcast on a daily basis. And you know, if you didn't, then we wouldn't do it still. So thank you for that. And as ever, stay tuned via social media. We're on Instagram still, doing all the World Cup posts. I think the follower numbers are creeping up on that. Twitter, you already know, at Indie Football, at Indie Sport, on Facebook at The Independent Sport. And I think that's about all.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.